You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hi, and welcome to another podcast in our series, Let's Talk Macro, a podcast on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we talk about interesting global and domestic macroeconomic topics. Today, as always, we have with us Srijith Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management Team, in conversation with me, Ahalya. Hi, Srijith. Thank you so much for being with us yet again.
Thanks, Ahalya. How are you doing?
Doing very well. Some very layered, nuanced, and important updates, I think, in the world of global macroeconomics. So let's get straight into it, Srijith. You know, we have spoken at length about monetary policy in India and around the world. But today we're going to be focusing on fiscal policy. I think another very important measure when understanding the different global macroeconomic themes at play. Now, the fiscal policy in the US has actually been garnered a lot of attention. So today we're going to be talking about how fiscal in the US has been loose and how this contrasts with the monetary policy there and its implications on the world and India specifically. So to start off, I think important to understand how the fiscal situation in the US has developed over the past couple of years, maybe the last decade or so. Srijith, so could you set the stage for us with that?
If you remember, after the 2008 global financial crisis, you know, the US federal government response to that, after the response, in fact, the fiscal deficit moderated and settled down in the 2 to 3% range from 2014. But then there's this Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. Where corporate tax rates were cut and repatriation of overseas corporate profits were incentivized. Interest expense also started to inch up. So fiscal deficit effectively went up from around 3.4% in the year ending September 2017 to just about 4.5% in the year ending September 2019. This is just before the pandemic end. You know, we all know what happened next. The COVID pandemic hit in 2020. And the U.S. Responded with a massive fiscal stimulus of almost 25% of GDP. You know, that's a pretty heavy number, and this was done in multiple rounds, and primarily in the form of direct cash transfers and also unemployment insurance, in addition to the health-related response. So the federal government fiscal deficit there picked up to almost 15% in 2020, the year when the pandemic started, and then stayed in double digits even in 2021. Now, the interesting aspect to note here is how the nature of stimulus differed from, say, during the 2008 crisis. During the 2008 crisis, fiscal deficit peaked just under 10% and it averaged around 9% from 2009 to 2011, if I remember correctly. But then the main thing is that back then, two things were very different. One, the step up in expenditure was much lesser than. So if you see as a percentage of GDP, the step up in expenditure was less than half of that in 2020. And even that was for just 1 year, because a good part of it was related to the housing sector because of the nature of the crisis then. Two, the tax revenues, if you see then, dropped by around 2.5% of GDP in 2009. And it stayed low for the next few years. Now, this is because the stimulus back then actually focused on tax cuts and not really on expenditure. So the differences, these differences that you're speaking about have important implications. But the essential point is that, the pandemic-related fiscal stimulus in the US was very heavy. It stayed that way for a while. It focused more on expenditure and put direct cash in people's bank accounts. Just to give you a comparison, if you look at the euro area, there was this period of fiscal consolidation after the various, the crisis in some of the countries that we saw after 2008. So the fiscal deficit there averaged around 0.5% of GDP in the 2018-2019 period. But after the pandemic hit, the spiked to over 7% in 2020, and it was, I think, above 5% in 2021. So let's not forget, Europe faced significant energy price pressures also after Russia-Ukraine war started. And so governments, for instance, like in Germany, introduced various measures to subsidize energy prices for consumers. Fortunately, the energy situation improved, there more than expected last year. But broadly, if you compare the situation there with US, the euro area fiscal policy expansion during the pandemic was lesser, and direct cash payouts were lesser. So that's how it really looks like.
Thank you for tracing that evolution for us, Srijit. I think also very important to acknowledge that the response from the US has been quite heavy, right, in this area. Yeah. And even now, we do kind of hear about the US fiscal policy more than Europe's fiscal policy with news about the debt ceiling or the government shutdown. Yeah. So where is the US now on its fiscal policy? Why is it gaining so much attention? And along with the numbers, if you could also set some context for us.
Yeah. So in early June this year, the debt ceiling crisis was averted just 2 days before the Treasury said it would, you know, run out of cash to pay its bills. Okay. The Fiscal Responsibility Act was passed. The default by the U.S. federal government is avoided. And the debt ceiling was suspended till January 2025 for now. Okay. So after this, obviously, the Treasury bond supply picked up in the market as the government started borrowing. Now, according to the act that was passed, which is the, you know, the Fiscal Responsibility Act, projected deficits over the next 10 years in the U.S. were reduced by, you know, $1.5 trillion. And so the projected federal debt held by the public 10 years from now, that is in 2033, that is, reduces by about 3% to $45+ trillion. But that is still 115% of GDP. So that's still quite high. Mm-hmm. That is one thing. The other thing is that in late June, the Supreme Court struck down the student loan forgiveness program, which was sort of started last year. Right. And then in September last month, there was the possibility of a federal government shutdown. But a temporary funding bill has been passed, and, you know, which now keeps the government functioning till 17th November. So that's only a few weeks away. So not the best of situations there. If you look at the numbers, in the U.S., after a year of consolidation to 5.4% of GDP last year, the fiscal deficit this year is again up to around 6.4%, according to the data just got released. And actually, if you remove the impact of the student loan forgiveness program, you know, from the last year and this year, so instead of 5.4 going to 6.4 this year, it actually turns out to be 4% going to 7.6%. So that's a pretty big jump. Some of the higher deficit this year is because, you know, the tax collection from, for example, the wildfire affected areas in California and deferred from April to October. You know, the U.S. follows a fiscal year ending in September. So this April to October shift means the collection will now be next year, not this year. So that's the reason for some of the jump, but it's still quite wide and quite a big jump. So the bottom line is still that the U.S. fiscal government fiscal deficit is still very high. And if you compare with the euro area again, they're looking at a 3.2% fiscal deficit if you look at the projections of the ECB this year. So that's how it really looks like, but quite a big jump there for the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of feels like a lot happening, right, in a very short span of time, quicker than people can keep up with, really. So it's good that we're discussing it in today's podcast. So it definitely seems that the U.S. is on a higher fiscal path than before the pandemic. What are the forecasts like? What are your predictions for the next few years as a result of the current fiscal situation there? And is it going to stay elevated or is it going to come off? Because from everything we've talked about now, the numbers seem to just keep going up.
Yeah, that's a very good question. So as per the U.S. Congressional Budget Office, the CBO, their forecast in May, according to that, the deficit was slated to increase from 5.9% this year to 7.3%. Like I said, before 10 years from now, in 2033. But then there's this Fiscal Responsibility Act that is passed, which we just discussed in, which was passed in June. After that, the projection was updated, and now it basically goes to 6.4% deficit in 2033. But even that really suggests that, the already elevated federal fiscal path is not projected to fall. It continues to stay elevated. Okay. And this is mainly because the tax revenue to GDP is expected to fall there, while the, the expenditure to GDP rises a bit. So it's not an ideal combination. And again, just to look at it versus the euro area, the ECB is projecting till 2025. And even that is for the deficit to fall to 2.9% from 3.2%, we just talked about this year. Again, that's not like a big fall for the euro area. And it still continues to be above the pre-pandemic situation, which is, like we said, around 0.5% of GDP. But there's some moderation there, nevertheless. And therefore, if you compare the US to, the euro area, so even relatively, the US is definitely on a higher fiscal path.
Okay, so given that the fiscal path in the U.S. is expected to stay elevated, you know, even as per official projections, it's not such great news. But what will be the economic implications of this? As we always do, Srijit, important to understand certain areas, macroeconomic play out in contrast with the rest of the world. Are we already seeing this play out, or is it something that we actually need to gear ourselves up for? Is it already affecting other countries and other economies?
Yeah. So one is the impact we have seen from the pandemic related stimulus. So when the government spends, you know, instead of cutting revenue and it makes direct cash transfers like the US did, the impact on consumption demand is typically higher. You know, not to mention all this happened when a paycheck protection related liquidity facility was also provided in the US. And also because of the nature of the crisis where people couldn't go out and spend, you know, it created considerable excess household savings there. So some of the estimates put it at around $2.3 trillion. Now, this turned out to be a major factor in fueling inflation, apart from the global supply bottlenecks. Now, the impact we are clearly seeing right now is the number of upside growth surprises in the US. The labor market and household situation remains fairly buoyant, at least in aggregate, you know, although rebalance is happening. Compare this with Europe, where growth is actually mostly surprising to the downside. Typically, higher fiscal deficit implies higher bond supply in the market and this crowding of the private sector, you know, especially if the deficit is to stay high for a while. But I think the most important thing is that let's not forget the current situation. That is, the upside growth surprises in the US are happening when the Fed has raised policy rates at a historical pace and magnitude. And its balance sheet size is being reduced every month. So it's almost around 10% down from its peak. So monetary policy is left with even more work to slow the economy down because fiscal is loose. And this, therefore, further fuels the higher for longer cry on interest rates. Now, the recent rally in real bond yields also partly a reflection of this, you know, loose fiscal policy that is there in the US. The other implication, if you ask me, of this elevated fiscal projection is on long-term neutral interest rates. That is essentially the rate at which policy is neither accommodative nor restrictive. One needs to really question whether this is now higher than pre-pandemic, although you know, admittedly, long-term neutral interest rates are impacted by several factors like, you know, productivity, savings, and investments. But eventually, where the actual policy rate is versus the neutral rate, you know, will determine whether policy is restrictive or accommodative. And so, fiscal projection that we have in front of us, which is for, you know, fiscal to stay elevated and not to fall, will also feed into the estimate of rate cuts into the future. So that's where it all, you know, happens, and that's the kind of implication we should be looking at.
So I guess some heavy lifting on the monetary policy's part in the US as well, given that the fiscal policy is quite loose. Seem like both approaches need to be extremely aggressive. Fiscal's already being quite aggressive. So we have an example in the US on how divergent monetary and fiscal policies isn't the best mix, especially given the current context, you know, when most of the advanced economies in the world are fighting very high inflation. Now, that also, you know, triggered my curiosity about India, Srijit. What is the situation here in terms of our fiscal policy? Can you help us understand that a little bit?
Sure. So India's fiscal deficit in FY 2019, the year before the pandemic, was around 3.4% of GDP. I mean, this is the central government fiscal deficit. So it went up to 9.2% of GDP in the financial year 2021. But that was because the off-budget funding of the Food Corporation of India, the FCI, essentially food-related subsidies, was stopped. So this is an opportunity utilized by the central government to, you know, make the budget cleaner and more transparent. The actual fiscal response to the pandemic was quite measured. There were no heavy cash handouts, you know, and a good part of the fiscal support was also in the form of credit guarantees and so on. Even if one looks at the RBI's response, so the monetary policy response also, for instance, the RBI's balance sheet, if you look at it, it expanded only 14% in that first 2 months in 2020, I think, the March-April period in 2020, versus the Fed's balance sheet, which actually expanded 60%. So it's quite a stark difference. In fact, the other thing is that the RBI's balance sheet size peaked around 2 years ago in October 2021, although some part of the subsequent reduction was due to the fall in FX reserves. So in short, what I'm trying to say is, a measured pandemic response from both fiscal and monetary policy in India. And what this did is it did not really create an excess demand side problem, you know, in terms of price pressures, basically, demand side pressures and inflation like that in the US. No, we also have a fiscal glide path in place for the central government, which is to get to less than 4.5% of GDP deficit for the government by financial year 2026.
Right.
This year's number for financial year 2024 is 5.9%, and looking at the recent data, particularly after August, it seems to be well on track for now.
Okay.
So the central government deficit numbers for an emerging economy like India is estimated to be lower than the US for the near future, which is quite noteworthy. Now, we should also look at the state governments here, ideally look at the consolidated deficit. So even if you look at their deficit, it was under 3% before the pandemic, increased to above 4% during the pandemic, and it's again expected to fall below 3% this year. The concern on state government deficits have, more than the numbers, have been more on, quality of budgeting, the quality of expenditure, really, which is the share of capital expenditure in the overall the expenditure, and the off-balance sheet borrowings or state-guaranteed borrowings. So there seems to be some work in this direction, mainly from the center, though, for now, and which is to spend on capital expenditure through probably giving interest-free capex loans to states, and also incentivizing them to reduce the off-balance sheet borrowing by linking that to their yearly limit on market borrowings through SDLs and so on. So that's essentially work in progress, but that's the broad fiscal situation here in India.
Quite an interesting comparison, actually, Srijit, when you take a look at the U.S. fiscal policy and, how it fares against India, right?
Yeah.
So as we reach the end of today's very interesting and informative episode, Srijit, could you please leave our listeners with three key takeaways from this discussion, as we always do?
Sure. One, the U.S. fiscal path started moving high even before the pandemic. And then the pandemic-related stimulus was very heavy, especially when you look at it in hindsight. The nature of the stimulus was also such that it created massive demand-side pressure on inflation.
Mm-hmm.
In the Europe too, the fiscal deficit picked up, but not to the extent in the US, and less in the form of direct cash payments. Two, the US faced multiple fiscal issues this year. The debt ceiling, which has been extended till January 2025, the cancellation of the student loan forgiveness program, and most recently, the government shutdown, which has been deferred only till mid-November, so just a few weeks away. The projections also don't look very encouraging as of now, as the CBO's projections see federal deficit at 6.4% of GDP even 10 years from now. If we compare this even with an emerging economy like India, which we just did, where policies were more measured during the pandemic, even that is, the deficit numbers are higher for the near future. Three, and finally, the implications of all this, which is high demand-side inflation, upside growth surprises, more work for monetary policy to slow the economy and inflation, and thus the higher for longer narrative getting stronger, and the real bond yields rallying that we've seen. But the impact yet to be fully assessed is on the long-term neutral interest rate, whether it has moved higher after the pandemic, and what this really means for the quantum of rate cuts in the future. Yeah, I'll put it there.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you so much for that rundown towards the end, Srijit, and some really interesting insights on the fiscal policy in the US right now, and also a little sneak peek into its elevated trajectory for at least some time now. But most importantly, the ties between the situation there and the implications on a global level, right? Thank you once again, Srijit, and thanks to our listeners as always. That's all for today on Let's Talk Macro. We'll be back with another episode very soon. Until then, stay safe, stay happy.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.